Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 182. In the news, I just wanted to say that I hope you guys all enjoyed last week's episode. Brother Steve Harrison was in it, and his segment, as usual, was just amazing. I can't thank him enough for what he does for us. Also, I hope you enjoyed Brother Eric Diamond on the Masonic Roundtable last week. I will be absent for one more week due to some district responsibilities, but rest assured that I will be back on TMR just as soon as possible. I have to give a shout out to Brother Joseph Wages for the Illuminati book. It's great, and you all should check it out. Also, I did want to mention that Brother Matt Wonacki will be working on bringing us an esoteric segment on a monthly basis. It will just work a little bit better for him and his schedule, and of course, we appreciate all the work he does. So in the weeks which will be esoteric and he isn't with us, I will try to find some solid esoteric content for us to contemplate. We will have a few great pieces this week, in fact. So the first paper this week is called The Occultism of the Bible and the Kabbalah. So if you're into the Kabbalah, I really urge you to check out that last episode of the Masonic Roundtable because Brother Eric Diamond knows what he's talking about. The episode was featuring Brother Eric Diamond, and the topic was the Kabbalah. So check it out. You will not be disappointed. So with that, we will go right into the first piece of the week for the esoteric segment, The Occultism of the Bible and the Kabbalah by Rabbi H. Geffen, 32nd degree FPS, featured in The New Age, February 1950. Kabbalah is a knowledge of divine wisdom. This truth is the foundation stone upon which the regenerating and saving portion of every true religion is based. The Kabbalah transmits to us such knowledge as the adepts of those times choose to commit to writing. Our Masonic spiritual allegories are based on the Kabbalah, which is known to us moderns as the Kabbalistic doctrine. Monotheism is the only true religion. Masonic students claim the Bible to be an occult book wherein the Kabbalistic system is embodied in allegories and symbols. The written and oral laws are dependent on and complete each other. The Kabbalah originated with the Essenes and also with the initiated Talmudists who arranged Kabbalistic schools that followed Akiba and Simon ben Jochai, who consolidated it into scientific systems in the books Yetzirah and Zohar. The two chief classics of the Kabbalah, Yetzirah and Zohar, attributed respectively to Akiba and Simon ben Jochai, reveal the basis of the occult religion of the Hebrews. The most ancient and most comprehensive is the Sefer Yetzirah, probably written by Rabbi Akiba. The Zohar teaches us that true Torah, or the law of Moses, is not in the literal, but in the allegorical interpretation of the Pentateuch. Philo Judaeus, in his treatise on the allegories of the sacred laws, elucidated in a very cautious manner a few of these subjects: the creation, the Garden of Eden, the deluge, the tiling of the earth by man, the confusion of languages, the migration of Abraham, his two wives, and many more such subjects having mystic truths as their foundation. Moses probably received and revived the monotheism of Abraham, but the divine Kabbalah is the spiritual interpretation of material symbols and emblems. It is this tradition, namely, the esoteric law of Moses, which the Torah, whereof is recorded in the Talmud, quote, Moses received the oral law from Sinai and delivered it to Joshua, and Joshua to the elders, and the elders to the prophets, and the prophets to the men of the great synagogue. It must therefore be well understood that the Torah thus mentioned by the Talmud is not written, but the oral law of Kabbalah transmitted by tradition from generation to generation until collected by Simon ben Jochai and preserved in the volume of the Zohar. The Talmud is the oral law and is, in itself, in some places of Kabbalistic character as a symbolical vehicle of the divine Kabbalah. There were two traditions in the occult Kabbalah, an exoteric tradition perpetuated and an esoteric tradition wherein the Kabbalah was transmitted. The exoteric tradition is permeated with Kabbalism. One must be a studious Mason to discern the esoteric direction from the exoteric customs having no divine object. It is not my purpose here to write the story of Moses. It is well known that he had obtained the hidden mysteries of Egypt, but he annulled the superstitious belief of the Egyptians, and he built a true monotheistic creed of divine wisdom. Hence, he insisted on worship being directed exclusively to Jehovah, the one universal omnipotent God. He also insisted on a perfect purity of thought, word, and deed. As a true prophet, we must suppose that his sacrifices consisted not of the shedding of innocent blood, but his intention was to prevent the people from human sacrifices. In studying diligently Masonic occult philosophy, we must thus take into consideration that the Bible is a Kabbalistic book, allegorically written and symbolically illustrated. The systems of the Kabbalah and esoteric masonry are identical, and for this reason, the Masons call their temple the Temple of Solomon. All the Masonic ceremonies have Kabbalistic base. Their virtue is not doubted. There are moral, hygienic, and spiritual rules of conduct given. The highest thought that Kabbalah and Masonry ever expressed was universality. Although the Bible history is allegoric and symbolic and has much fable, it is doubtless founded upon truth. Moses and the prophets, the Essenes and the Tanaim, were occultists, and consequently most if not all their writings are manifestly or occultly treatises on Kabbalah. And we can say with certainty that they were the forerunners of Masonry. This assumption must naturally occur to the minds of only right-thinking Masons who are penetrated by the sublime virtues of our order and are justly entitled to bear the name of the occult Masonic students. Alright, I hope you enjoyed that shorter esoteric paper, but we do have one more, and it's called Enlightenment from the Ritual by Giuliano Di Bernardo, Grandmaster of the Regular Lodge of Italy. The ceremony of passing. The worshipful master faces the candidate. As in the previous degree, you were made yourself acquainted with the principles of moral truth and virtue. You are now permitted to extend your researches into the hidden mysteries of nature and science. Emulation Ritual, Lewis Masonic, London, 1991, page 137. The ceremony of raising. The worshipful master speaks, quote, "Proceeding onwards, still guiding your progress by the principles of moral truth, you were led into the second degree to contemplate the intellectual faculty and to trace it from its development through the paths of heavenly science, even to the throne of God himself. Mark how rational faculty can only take the fellowcraft to the quote-unquote throne of God. At this point, the rational intellect is exhausted in its operations, or, if you prefer, dies, or is sacrificed before the Supreme Being. This key point is clarified shortly afterwards, when the Master says, "Let me now beg you to observe that the light of a Master Mason is darkness visible, serving only to express that gloom which rests on the prospect of futurity. It is that mysterious veil which the eyes of human reason cannot penetrate unless assisted by the light which is from above." End quote. These rituals offer a key to enlightenment. 1. The first degree is characterized by the quote-unquote principles of moral truth, the relations governing man and man, and can therefore be called the degree of ethics. The second degree is characterized by the heavenly science, knowledge of the spiritual nature observed in created things. The Mason is encouraged to perceive heavenly science from a rational standpoint, passing from visible to underlying causes. Seek, and ye shall find. The degree can therefore be called the degree of metaphysics, understood rationally. And 3. The third degree, still characterized by the relationship between man and God, takes this relationship beyond the strictly rational sphere. This degree can therefore be called the degree of metaphysics understood intuitively, representing a raising from mortal perception, perception governed by time and death, to that unfathomable light which is from above. The true import of the third degree will be lost if Masons think of it as a quote-unquote once-and-for-all event akin to initiation. Rather, it represents a mystical process which must be continually dynamized if the Master Mason is to achieve or sustain his mastery. Masons are reminded that the path is one of perfecting toward perfection. Perfection is the Neoplatonic ideal, identification with the light which is from above. This perfection is indicated to us by an array of symbols, such as the one which can be found in the third degree opening of the emulation ritual, where we find the following questions: what is that what is lost? How came they lost? And where do you hope to find them? What is it? Etc., etc. Perfection requires that we understand that 1. The true secrets of a Master Mason have been lost. 2. What was lost must be sought. 3. These secrets may be found again with the aid of a circle. And 4. Being in the center of a circle, a Master Mason cannot err. Why is perfection represented by a geometrical figure of a circle and a point? I believe that we must look to the philosophical and alchemical origins of modern Freemasonry before 1717. The seamless circle represents perfection extended in time, like movements of heavenly bodies. They move around something. That something is the center, which, not moving, represents the timeless. Thus, Copernicus, in his epoch-marking work on the revelations of the celestial orbs, 1543, quoting Hermes Trismegistus, can write of the stable, illuminating sun as the visible God, the manifest source of visible light and dynamic life. To be centered, to concentrate, creates a circle around the one, the original perfection. Elias Ashmole's motto was ex uno omnia, from the one, all. We may also think of this great Hermetic dictum, God is an infinite sphere whose center is everywhere, circumference nowhere. These and similar insights were very important to the philosophers of the Renaissance, on whom we depend for much of our speculative material, because they linked the harmonized scientific discoveries with spiritual order in the universe, the hidden mysteries of nature and science. The Freemason will only find his goal when his perception passes through the visible order, and he is raised to the spiritual reality which exists at the heart, the link and the key to which lies in his own heart, which, as he learns in the first degree, must first be true, and then thus the Mason is centered and make partake in the divine presence concentrated therein. Thus, while in the physical realm, he is in harmony with the spiritual law behind the visible universe. He is at one with the great architect's design. The Masonic path may therefore be viewed as an ascending or raising staircase of light with seven steps. The first light is the light man receives with initiation, in which the visible darkness is overcome, while the last is the light preceding the mystic union with God. When non-visible darkness is reached, the seven steps can be described as perception, examination, reflection, knowledge, understanding, wisdom, and truth. When the Mason achieves mystic union with God, in an allegorical sense, the light-darkness duality, the checkered floor, disappears. The union can no longer be described. The great architect of the universe becomes Ein Sof, the Kabbalist, the unknowable allegorical depth which appears to man's unenlightened mind as an impenetrable darkness. Fiat lux. Let there be light. All right, now is the time during the show that I ask you to support the show. We have a few ways of doing that, and we have some news about this as well. So the first thing we have is our apps, and those are the applications you can download on your smartphone or your iPad or your tablets. They are available for Android, Apple, and Windows phones. If you're on Apple, you will want to download the Podcast Box application and then search for Whence Came You within the app. The app is $2, and what you get is the papers we read on the show as well as a Masonic wallpaper for your mobile device, and occasionally a video or even a book. The second way is through some shopping. So if you are interested in healthy living supplements, workout equipment, all kinds of top-end stuff that relates to health, I would urge you to check out onnit.com, and if you use our coupon code WCY, you'll get 10% off, and they send a little bit back to the show to help keep the lights on. The second thing we have is through freemasonryart.com, which is run by friend and brother Juan Sepulveda of the Winding Stairs podcast, who is also a host on the Masonic Round Table. Again, use coupon code WCY for 10% off, and he will donate back to the show. And the third place you can do some shopping is with FreemasonTees.com. Again, use code WCY, and you'll get 10% off your purchase. Another way we have is if you do a direct donation through PayPal. So if you donate $1 or $2 or whatever you want to donate, that goes right into the show's production fund and helps us bring you Masonic education. And we also have button pins for sale. The WCY original diecast pin went so quickly, we needed to meet a demand for those. So I have had button pins made. They are campaign style. They're just like a safety pin button type where you unlatch the pin, push it through, and then you have to relatch it. Those are $5. And again, it's free shipping anywhere in the world. So sometimes we make $1 on those. Sometimes we don't make anything. But the point is to get you something really cool and to help spread the word about Masonry. The diecast pin, I am working with a company right now who is going to do a second run of the Whence Came You diecast pins. Those will be $10 as they were before. Shipping is free anywhere in the world. And what we're going to do with them is this time around, we are using the same design, but they are going to be made just a little bit different. So they're not going to have the soft pour enamel over the top. They're going to be a little bit more flat and a little bit more clean looking. I think these are going to be better than the previous ones. Not to say anything bad about the people who made the previous pins. They did a fantastic job, and we so appreciate what they did for us. And those were done largely in part thanks to Brian Evichin of fellowcrafted.com, who makes pens. So many thanks to those guys, and I will keep you up to date and with the details about the pins once we get a solid number for the quote on those, and we may even do a pre-sale. So moving right along into our somewhat empirical paper this week. So the empirical paper this week is called Freemasonry, Y33, and it's by Brother Brent S. Morris. There has been wide enthusiasm about the establishment of Scottish Rite Research Society, but the question has been raised often. Are there really enough topics to research in the Scottish Rite? Certainly there are difficulties if we look to the earliest origins of our rite in France, as the primary research materials are in another country, across the ocean. Further, it is intimidating to look at the writings on the right by such master scholars as Baynard, Carter, Harris, Jackson, or Lobinger. It is easy to imagine that little remains to be done, but to occasionally admire their splendid efforts. Nothing could be farther from the truth. There are dozens of interesting, exciting, and important issues about the Scottish Rite that have never been addressed. Some require access to specialized research materials, but many are within the reach of any interested student. To spur research in this understudied area, several questions are posed about the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. No claim is made that these questions have never been answered, just that a fresh consideration would be welcomed. Caps, rings, and things. In 1797, 4 years before the establishment of the Mother Supreme Council, Thomas Smith Webb published his landmark book, Freemasonry's Monitor or Illustrations of Masonry. His book was an abbreviation of William Preston's 1772 Illustrations of Masonry, arranged to suit the American Masonic environment. Webb's work formed the foundation for what is considered, quote-unquote, standard American ritual. His work with the ritual was expended upon Jeremy Ladd Cross, John Barney, and other itinerant Masonic lecturers of the 18th century. In the first edition of Freemasonry's Monitor, there was a section containing an account of the ineffable degrees of Masonry, those conferred lodges of perfection. These bodies were established under Stephen Moran's Rite of Perfection. Webb's description of the degree of perfection or grand elect, perfect and sublime master, explains that, quote, the jewels appertaining to this degree include a gold ring with this motto, virtue unites what death cannot part. A quick check of the oldest manuscript rituals in the archives of the Mother Supreme Council, including the Franken manuscript, the oldest English version of the Scottish Rite degrees, shows that a gold ring with this motto has always been given to those receiving the degree of perfection. Several questions immediately present themselves. 1. How long has a gold ring been associated with the 14th degree? The evidence just cited gives an answer of at least 200 years in the United States alone. 2. Where is the oldest example of a 14th degree ring? If 14th degree rings have been given out for 2 centuries, then there must be an oldest ring lurking in some Masonic museum. 3. When did a distinctive ring become associated with the 33rd, and where is the oldest example of a 33rd degree ring? Well, the 14th degree ring is not the only Scottish Rite degree with a distinctive ring. The 33rd degree ring is immediately recognized as a sign of a great Masonic achievement. However, there do not seem to be early written references to the ring of this degree. 4. Where was the 33rd degree jewel first described, and when did it come into general use? Another distinctive item of regalia associated with the Scottish Rite is the Grand Decoration of the Order, or the Jewel of the 33rd Degree. While this is described in the appendix of the Constitutions of 1786, it appears nowhere in the Constitutions of 1762. Presumably, it was created or adopted from some other system during the 24-year period of 1762 to 1786. 5. What is the history of caps in the Scottish Rite? Who designed the caps? When were they introduced? Has the same color scheme always been used? Did caps replace some other insignia? Was the introduction of caps well received by Valleys? Well, anybody attending a Scottish Rite meeting for the first time, especially in the southern jurisdiction, is quickly struck by the distinctive caps worn by our members, indicating their degree. While their use is now the norm, caps are a fairly recent addition to the Rite's regalia. Collateral information. Number 6. Where did Thomas Smithweb get the information on the ineffable degrees for his 1797 Freemason's Monitor? Not all information about the craft is available from records to direct evidence. Many times it is necessary to rely on secondary sources. The description of the ineffable degrees in Webb's Freemasonry's Monitor is an example of secondary information. It is not known where Webb obtained the material of these 11 degrees, although a Lodge of Perfection had been established in Albany in 1767. It was dormant during the years Webb lived in that city, and it seems certain that he was not made a member of the Lodge. He may have received the monitorial data from some Albany Mason who had been a member of the Lodge and had possession of the rituals, or Webb may have gathered the data on one of his visits to Boston or Philadelphia. While we do not know where Webb received his information about the ineffable degrees, the very fact that the degrees are mentioned gives us insight to the precursors of the Scottish Rite. Were the ineffable degrees so popular that the descriptions in his monitor were eagerly welcomed? Or did Webb include the information to tease his readers and increase his sales? What does Burrage's 1766 book tell us about the evolution of Scottish Rite degrees? Well, Webb was a friend of Masonry, and his descriptions of the ineffable degrees were at worst designed as a sales gimmick. Not all authors as benign. Exposés of Masonic rituals have been popular books for centuries, and they sometimes give the only insight into the evolution of Masonic rituals and ceremonies. The first exposé of rituals that evolved into the Scottish Rite degrees was published in 1766 by a Monsieur Burrage, The Most Secret Mysteries of the High Grades of Masonry Unveiled. This exposé was wildly successful with the public, not only because it unveiled the most secret mysteries, but also because it was a book prohibited by the French government. Its studies should provide the same understanding for Scottish Rite rituals as three distinct knocks and other passwords provide for the craft. Number 8. What is the source of the degrees in Bernard's Light on Masonry? France was not the only source of ritual exposés of the high grades. Many were published during the American anti-Masonic period, including one of the most notorious, Light on Masonry, published in 1829 by Elder David Bernard. This book alleges to give the rituals for all of the craft, York and Scottish Rite degrees, plus 10 other French degrees. Elder Bernard appears to have borrowed heavily from Burrage, as the rituals for many of his detached degrees are very similar. Bernard could have translated from Les Plus Secrets Mysteries, or he may have exposed the ceremonies of some Masons who themselves translated Burrage. If accurate, the Scottish Rite rituals in Bernard's Light on Masonry, published just 28 years after the information of the Mother Supreme Council, give us a unique snapshot of our early ceremonies. However, the Scottish Rite rituals in Light on Masonry differ significantly from known practices of the Southern jurisdiction. They could be early Northern Masonic jurisdiction rituals or rituals from the Cerno Supreme Council or from yet some unrecognized source. Reunions. Number 9. When and where did Scottish Rite reunions originate? The Scottish Rite in America has developed a distinct method of conferring the degrees in the periodic reunions of our valleys. The constitutions of 1762 require the deliberate and obviously symbolic delay of 81 months between first degree and 25th degree. Thus, the rapid conferral of degrees at a reunion flies in the face of at least symbolic delays, if not actual practice, of the Scottish Rite. Number 10. How quickly accepted was the idea of a reunion? Freemasonry as a society venerates tradition, even in the face of common sense. It is thus hard to imagine that such a radical concept as a reunion was easily adopted. Number 11. When and where did elaborate staging come to be used for the Scottish Rite degrees? Another distinctive feature of American Scottish Rite degrees is their elaborate staging and costuming, elaborate beyond the dreams of our founders. Professor Lance Brockman of the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities, has made a study of stage sets belonging to various Scottish Rite valleys. In many cases, our valleys have unwittingly preserved wonderful examples of theatrical art previously thought lost. The Scottish Rite customs. Number 12. Is there any evidence that these festivals were ever celebrated? The constitutions of 1762 require princes of Jerusalem to celebrate two feast days, November 20th when their ancestors made their entry into Jerusalem on February 23rd to celebrate the rebuilding of the temple. Knights of the East celebrate the rebuilding of the temple and the equinoxes, March 22nd and September 22nd. The Grand Elect Perfect Masons celebrate dedication of the first temple on July 5th. The constitutions of 1786 require two festivals, one on the 1st of October, when our property was sequestered and given to the Knights of Malta, and the other on the 27th of December, St. John the Evangelist Day. All of these festivals seem to be lost to modern Scottish Rite tradition, though they may have been enjoyed by our earlier brethren. What is the history of the Scottish Rite Maundy Thursday observance? The Maundy Thursday ceremony of our chapters of Rose Croy is the most widely celebrated of Scottish Rite events today. Even though it is not mentioned in the secret constitutions of 1761, the constitutions of 1762, nor the constitutions of 1786. Number 14. When was the first Maundy Thursday celebration held in the United States? When did it come to replace the formerly mandated festivals? Did this change first occur in Europe or in America? Number 15. When was the sign of the Good Shepherd adopted into the southern jurisdiction as the Scottish Rite attitude of prayer? Closely associated with the Rose Croy degree in the southern jurisdiction is the Sign of a Good Shepherd, or the Scottish Rite attitude of prayer. The frontispiece of Les Plus Secrets Mysteries, reproduced on page, shows a temple with a robed shepherd on the steps holding a lamb in the sign of a good shepherd. This could be the first time this sign was connected with masonry. Number 16. What is the history of the Feast of Tishiri? In recent years, the Feast of Tishiri has become a popular celebration in the southern jurisdiction, and it, like Maundy Thursday, is not mentioned in our founding documents, certainly not as an obligation of the Perfect Elu. Number 17. When were distinctive crosses adopted to indicate a Scottish Rite Mason's degree? Besides their distinctive rings, 33rd degree Masons can be recognized by their use of a patriarchal cross, either on their caps or after their signatures. Sovereign Grand Inspectors General use the patriarchal cross with the crosslets, while the Sovereign Grand Commander uses a cross, crosslet crossed. These privileged symbols were not described in any of our founding constitutions, nor used by Scottish Rite pioneers like Moran or De La Mata or Franken. Clandestine Scottish Rite Masonry. Number 18. How many Supreme Councils have existed in the United States? One of the principal goals of the founders of our Mother Supreme Council was to bring order out of chaos in the high degrees. While today all seems ordered and calm, the journey to our current state of prosperity was not easy. The road is littered with literally dozens of failed Supreme Councils. Some arose from schisms, some from illegitimate authority, some from greed, and some from spite. There were Supreme Councils that claimed jurisdiction over only a single state, for example, in New York, Connecticut, California, and Louisiana. The ancient and primitive rite of Memphis originally controlled somewhere from 91 to 97 degrees. Later, they constricted their degrees to a 33 and reformed themselves into a Supreme Council. Stories of this sort are almost endless. Number 19. Why was Sir Noahism so persistent? The most persistent clandestine Scottish Rite movement was that started by Joseph Sir Noah in New York in 1807. Sir Noah had legitimate authority to work Moran's 25-degree Rite of Perfection, but only for the northern part of Cuba. However, Sir Noah overstepped his authority when he claimed control over 33 degrees, probably the better to enable him to compete with the Scottish Rite. His Supreme Council and its many descendants and offshoots and revivals plagued legitimate Scottish Rite masonry until the beginning of the 20th century and spread throughout the Northeast and Midwest. The Sir Noah Supreme Council merged into the Northern Supreme Council in 1867. Peace prevailed a few years, but in 1881 the Sir Noah Supreme Council was revived and spread again with great energy. Number 20. Why was Albert Pike so adamant in his opposition to Sir Noahism? The Sir Noah movement became a bete noire for Albert Pike. He had battled the Sir Noahs during the early years of his tenure as Grand Commander and was responsible for the ultimate merger in 1867. Then, in 1881, when the Sir Noahs once again rose up, Pike opposed them with an amazing zeal and fury. His attacks on the Sir Noah Supreme Council seemed to go well beyond what was required to unseat an upstart challenger. Number 21. What is the story of those perjurers, apostates, and renegades in the city of Baltimore? In the archives of the Mother Supreme Council is a black leather-bound book prepared by Albert Pike and marked Book of Infamy. The book mentioned in Carter's History of the Supreme Council, Volume 3, lists the names of several dozens of members of the Mother Supreme Council who went over the Cerno Supreme Council after 1881. The introduction to one section in of names is particularly intriguing. Perjurers, apostates, and renegades in the city of Baltimore who, disloyal and rebellious because they were not permitted to confine the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite in Maryland, and Knight Templars crowned themselves with dishonor and infamy by shameless recreancy and desertion to Cernoism. April 1884. Number 22. What is the story of Ferdinand James Samuel Gorgas? The first name in a list of Baltimore is that of Ferdinand James Samuel Gorgas, a distinguished physician and dentist who had been coronated a 33rd degree jointly by the Grand Commanders of the Northern and Southern jurisdictions. Today, the Honor Society of the University of Maryland Dental School is named after Dr. Gorgas. He renounced the Southern jurisdiction and eventually became the Grand Commander of one of the two Cerno Supreme Councils that existed at the time. What could have influenced such a distinguished Mason, physician, dentist, and scholar to turn to Cernoism? Number 23, who joined and was active in the early Lodge of Perfection? And number 24, how did the early Scottish Rite Masons interact with other Masons and with Grand Lodge? Well, the Hots grade first appeared in the United States in Lodges of Perfection in at least the cities of Albany, Baltimore, Philadelphia, and Charleston. They almost certainly did not draw their membership from the ordinary Masons of those cities. Further, Masons with these exotic high degrees, in many cases claiming extraordinary prerogatives for themselves, must have caused some stir among the brethren. During the first expansion of the Scottish Rite, some states had grand consistories that worked with the sovereign grand inspectors general to control the Scottish Rite for that state. The last grand consistory was in the state of Kentucky. Number 25, how did grand consistories function in the states, and what led to their elimination? During the first expansion of the Scottish Rite, some states had grand consistories that worked with the sovereign grand inspectors general to control the Scottish Rite for that state. The last grand consistory was in the state of Kentucky, but it and all the others have been eliminated. Number 26, what caused the explosive growth of the Scottish Rite Masonry at the turn of the century? At the turn of the century, the Scottish Rite accounted for less than 4% of Master Masons in the United States, while today we account for nearly 33%. The moral lessons and degree pageantry of the York Rite is the equal to that of the Scottish Rite, and yet the Scottish Rite grew in prominence and strength at a surprising rate that was much faster than that of the York Rite. Number 27, what led to the disestablishment of the Councils of Princes of Jerusalem and the creation of Councils of Kadosh in the southern jurisdiction? When the Scottish Rite was established in Charleston in 1801, Princes of Jerusalem held a position of especial importance and prestige. In fact, there was no Council of Kadosh, the 19th through the 30th degree, as now found in the southern jurisdiction, but rather a Council of Princes of Jerusalem, 15th and 16th degree, between the Lodge of Perfection, 4th through 14th, and the Chapter of Rose Croix, 17 through the 18th. Number 28. Who did Stephen Morin appoint as Deputy Inspector General, and what were his reasons? And number 29. What were the accomplishments, if any, of these Deputy Inspector General? The Scottish Rite as we know it today is essentially the result of Stephen Morin's evangelizing efforts. The deputy inspector generals he appointed were often ineffective and occasionally unscrupulous in their activities. They were responsible, however, for the establishment of Scottish Rite Masonry. A thorough study of the activities and lives of these deputy inspectors should provide a detailed picture of an embryonic Scottish Rite. Number 30. What is the full story and results of Albert Pike's Western trip? During the later years of his life, Albert Pike made a lengthy Western journey in which he established many valleys of the Scottish Rite. The trip was by steamboat, horse, and train across rugged, uncivilized wilderness. On one level, the trip was a monument of human endurance, and on another, it established the structure of the Scottish Rite Masonry in the Western United States. Number 31. What administrative changes did Albert Pike make in his government of the southern jurisdiction? Albert Pike is best remembered as the ritualist and writer. There was more to his accomplishments, though. He took command of the southern jurisdiction when it was small, poorly organized, and nearly broke. At his death, the southern jurisdiction was efficiently governed and well on its way to becoming one of the most influential Masonic organizations in the world today. Number 32. What happened to the side degrees of the deputy inspectors general? The patents issued by Stephen Morin from the West Indies indicate that the deputy inspectors general controlled not only the 25 degrees of their right, but also another 19 side degrees. There is some evidence that the cryptic degrees of Royal Master and Select Master may have come from this source. Other degrees seem to have existed as titles only. Number 33. Why are there 33 degrees in the Scottish Rite? The Rite of Perfection of 25 degrees was reorganized into the Scottish Rite with the addition of 8 degrees, some of which may have been originally side degrees. There have been many speculations as to why the new rite chose to have 33 degrees. Was it because Jesus lived 33 years? Was 33 a natural evolution of 3 by 3, taken from the French custom of abbreviating Masonic words? For example, brother would be written as B slash and brothers as B slash B. 32 could be symbolic of the 10 sephiroth of the Kabbalah and the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet, and the 33 could be seen as presiding over the mystical union. The speculations are virtually endless, but as yet no firm answer has been given to this basic question about Scottish Rite Masonry. All right, that is Brent Morris's paper, and again, pretty cool, 33 questions, 33 kind of short answers. I hope it will spark light, as we like to say on TMR, and get you to go and search out bigger answers to those questions. It's now time to check out the famous Freemason of the week, which is Paul Shearer Althaus, born December 2nd, 1889, and he passed away on February 6th, 1954. He was an American opera singer. He began his career as a lyric tenor with a robust Italianate sound, excelling in roles like Cavaradossi, Pinkerton, and Tiridu. He later branched out into the dramatic terror repertoire, finding particular success in portraying Wagnerian heroes. He enjoyed a particularly fruitful association with the Metropolitan Opera in New York City. He was a member of St. John's Lodge number 435 in Reading, Pennsylvania. That's it for this week. Please find us on Facebook and like us and follow us on Twitter at WhenceCameU. You can check us out on Google Plus at the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com. If you're trying to get a hold of me, you can email me at that email address, or you can email me at admin@wcypodcast.com. I'm still trading Matchbox Lodges, so if you want one, shoot me an email and we will work out a trade for like a lapel pin or something of the sort. Please check out the Masonic Roundtable. Don't forget about it. Tuesdays at 10, 9 Central. Also, Steve Harrison's book, Tales from the Craft. You're going to want to check that out. Links to that are always on wcypodcast.com, or you can just go to amazon.com and check out Tales from the Craft. Print copies are coming. If not, they're already there. And that's it, guys. Stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.